discussion with among those that are here with minutes or corrections we need to make prior to the next meeting?
No, I didn't see anything.
All right, so we'll just move those.
Yeah.
Hold off on those. Then the draft caper discussion. So that's.
So if you look at this document here, CAPERS is the annual performance report that we submit to the Department of Housing and Urban Development on all the activities that have taken place in the past 12 months. This is not the actual CAPER, okay? It is entered and submitted via the Integrated Disbursement Information System, IDIS. It's done electronically. This is us taking output from IDIS and putting it in a Word document so that we can show you some of the basic information that is submitted. And I just want to, it'll be a broken record. You heard me say this last year. You're going to hear me say it next year. But we are very, very dissatisfied with this format of information to present with whether either citizens or policy decision makers, because there isn't a good way for us to get the information and output. So in fact, Samantha has had to go in and do manual, like, you know, everything you see in the tables is generally manually entered after the fact, because it doesn't print out. Big picture wise, we have done the activities that we said we were going to do at the beginning of the year, and have done, you know, have been in the process. You know, we've contracted with what we said we were going to contract. We don't have major concerns in terms of spend outs and projects not getting done. We do have Habitat for Humanity. Yeah, I'm going to big picture before we go into micro. Habitat for Humanity did have, from 2 years ago, they put in for acquisition of land. They have not acquired the land yet. They're the one kind of red flag that we've actually, they're out of their contract period, and we are going to be moving those funds, rolling them to other projects. So that's a conversation that we're having with Habitat. If you go to page 11.
How much money was that, or is that?
$70,000. And that'll be moved to the next social service project that was on your list for 2017, which was CVAPS rehabilitation. They weren't fully funded, and they had requested about $200,000.
So those are the people over there by the Toyota dealer?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. If you go to page 11, you will see under program income, what's highlighted in yellow still needs to, you know, this is all draft, you know, and we won't be submitting the CAPER until the end of the month, right, Sam?
Right.
Yeah.
And
so,
we'll bring it before council as part of the public hearing.
Yes, just like we did last year. And we're going to be working some more on what to bring to, I don't really know that bringing this to council is very helpful.
I was planning to make another 11 by 17 like I did for the action plan, and then like a breakdown of everything that was funded, what the outcomes were, maybe some pictures of the completed projects, just as a snapshot.
And that's probably some good conversation to have in terms of future years, because I think for UCPB, there needs to be a little more, you know, you need to have hands on some kinds of copies to have some more granularity, and that you can even, you know, even if an information on the table creates a question because it hasn't been updated or we couldn't update it, if it, you know, it gives you the opportunity to give me a phone call, give Samantha a phone call, add, you know, get us, you know, answer some questions. I think for the UCPB, that level, I mean, for the Board of County Councilors, you know, a more digestible, comprehensible format might be more appropriate. So we're So page 11, what's in yellow still needs to be updated. For as Sam was saying right before most of you walked in, we have served males in, minority business enterprises. And, we have served males and we have served women. But that's not been downloaded from IDIS yet. It will be, the information's already in IDIS to submit to HUD, but to present to you, we're going to be manually putting in these tables. Were you going to say something?
Well, I was going to say that this actually isn't in IDIS, which is why I have to go and look up our old contracts to put in the numbers.
Okay. Sorry. I misunderstood that. The below the part that's not highlighted, that is correct information. In terms of minority owners, rental properties, we have not served, those zeros are correct. We've not served white non-Hispanic, black non-Hispanic, Asian Pacific Islanders. But we're working on this right now. We're going to be working on it through the end of the month. We will be bringing a summary of the CAPER before a hearing for Board of County Councilors, and it will be, in IDIS for submission to HUD at the end of this month. What am I missing? Do you think?
When you talked about Habitat, it reminded me that we also just added about $58,000 to Isabella Court, which was a completed project. But because we have to reserve CHOTO funds each year from home, and we had reserved CHOTO funds to Isabella, when they build out that project, we had program income, which we were required to use first, and so it pumped out our CHOTO funds, and we are in danger of losing them. So we asked REACH to please find something that we could use these funds for so that we didn't lose them at the end of August. And it was a small enough amount based on their overall contract that didn't require a full notice and it wasn't a substantial amendment, but we did add that money. That was our total funds from 2 years ago. Committed it to REACH for some additional handrails for their senior housing and some electric door that they said, well, our project is great as it was completed, but if you really need us to take your funds, we can add these pieces because I knew that that's what Mayor Johnson would want us to do.
That's exactly what I wanted.
That we quoted on.
That's incredible.
Well, and I'll editorialize a little bit and express some frustration in this. This is the second year in a row, but I've only been here 2 years, where we find out about 6 months prior to the deadline to allocate funds. And when we say we lose funds, we wouldn't be able to get, we wouldn't be able to bill for them. We're not returning, any money that we have, that we have received. But it is money that would be allocated to our jurisdiction. And both in just your general expenditure and in CHOTO. We've not had good visibility of those funds not being allocated until about 6 months prior when it comes out in a report that's generated by IDIS. And we've spent the money down both years, and then the next year there's another $100,000 or $200,000 that is not part of our standard allocation. It's not part of our new program income. It appears to be funds from 1998 or, program income from 1998, which is only tracked in IDIS and you don't know what year it is. It's very confusing. And multiple jurisdictions have been encountering the same issue. To the point that HUD no longer has removed the expenditure deadlines for non-CHOTO funds starting this year. I mean, so it's a pretty common issue. There's still the commitment deadline for CHOTO funds, and it was $59,000 this year. As far as we can tell, we've allocated all CHOTO funds that are required to be allocated.
And the other change that HUD made is that you can, when your program income comes in, you can hold it throughout the year until you allocate next year. So it doesn't bump all of the funding that you already were planning
to expend.
Which is great.
That's very helpful. But in terms of this issue of prior year fundings, you know, from like several years ago, showing up with some expenditure or allocation deadline 6 months, you know, like from now, I'm not confident it's not going to happen again next year. And we've been talking to our program officer from HUD about that, and you know, they don't have any good answers yet either. So I want to thank you for bringing, you know, that's not part of the caper, you know, but I do think it's important, even though this one did not meet the, you know, it was within the guidelines for, not require, you know, it was minor enough to not require public announcement and not require any change to the action plan that had been approved and submitted by you guys. It did not, it fell within the guidelines of what we are permitted to allocate, you know, like the UCPD guidelines, not only HUD guidelines, but we're permitted to allocate to projects that have been, you know, already approved. You know, next year it is possible, and I don't have any confidence that that it won't be the case, that we may suddenly have $80,000 or something to expend on a short notice, and we may have to call a UCPD meeting for that. So just wanted to bring that up. Is there anything else you can think of that we should mention?
I did get the notice that our three-year Urban County qualification was approved by HUD.
Mm-hmm. So application update. We've been in the process of...
Before you move on.
Go ahead.
As someone who builds and has inspections all the time, looking at the back 39, CR 50, page 27, how do we give these people money and then share a traditional living house when they go to inspect, bathroom, no hot water, no P-trap? P-trap, of course, is what keeps the sewer gas from coming back into your house.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that get by these people before they call for these inspections? And as these inspections come back, re-inspections cost me $100-$150, depending on who's coming. Are they paying for that as well? I mean, I don't know how you get some of these happen.
So we don't charge them for our re-inspections.
So is that you going? Who's looking to make sure that
we have
that?
We have an inspector, Rich Walters, who goes on a schedule and inspects the unit and helps the property owner manager be in compliance with the
code,
the housing quality inspection standards.
Because I mean, what waste of time.
Well, and so I don't know why this is called traditional living house. This address, 1115 West 13th Street, is the emergency shelter. That's why there's 17 bedrooms. That houses 30 guys a day, and I'm sure it's a lot more difficult. Not that they shouldn't. They should be able to keep it maintained and
pass an
inspection. But
P-trap is...
important.
Otherwise, without a P-trap, the water's going straight onto the floor. You've got to have that. Going to the system, so I'm just trying to figure out what responsibility these people have. If they're taking the people's money, certainly they have some responsibility to keep the place up. Because I certainly don't want to hear from them next year and say we had some floors rot out because some water was dripping, and then so, then I'm a little harsh. No, fix it yourself.
Yeah, so these projects are all that receive money for the original acquisition or major rehabilitations of the buildings. The share property is the emergency shelter. They also have transitional housing, which is upstairs. And so there is bathrooms that are accessible only to the transitional housing occupants, which does pose additional issues with them changing those unit, modifying them themselves.
These are older projects that, like this, that we continue to inspect. They do have to correct them when they're found, and they have to pay for those corrections. We do not fund that. We don't charge them for coming back to the reinspection. We make sure that they stay in compliance with the habitability requirements. Not taking away from your point, but just to be clear, we're not paying for that. For those repairs.
I mean, when you see smoke detectors that, removed, my biggest nightmare is something we own in Battleground burns down, and then there's someone, Ms. Olson can explain, Mr. Bolt can explain here, where were the smoke detectors?
Yeah.
And why did a public facility that you put money into have smoke detectors removed? That's a hard question for anybody.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know Ms. Olson, Mr. Bolt, or the other three don't want to answer that question.
No.
And so I'm just.
And that's a big reason that we're required to do the inspections on a regular basis for these properties, is to make sure that they are up to those habitability standards.
Which brings up the paper that you gave us. I read that in the paper myself.
Yeah.
How often are we
annually?
Depends on the size of the project. It could be annually, every 2 years, or every 3 years. And HUD is actually working on new guidelines on how often they have to be done, but traditionally larger projects are annually, smaller projects are every 3 years.
And that's the one guy, he does them all?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Very busy.
Busy guy. But, so then when you read this in the paper, how does the busy guy not have a schedule that says, here are the, and I don't know how many there are, I'll pick a number, 100. And in the last 3 years, how come the busy guy hasn't made it around to all of them?
So he does have a schedule, and so the answer to the how, I'm not gonna, there isn't, he should have had a schedule. I'm not gonna be like, how it happens is,
things happen. I get that part.
Well, no, I'm not even going to excuse that. I mean, I think the finding as written, you have a copy. There are no question costs in there. This is completely non-financial. I think the finding is accurate. As written, I don't really have an issue with any of the facts that are in there. So in answer to the direct answer to your question is the how is there were inadequate internal controls to ensure that his schedule was complete and correct. I mean, that's the bottom line answer. We can argue, and our compliance side on the county, both on finance, our compliance officers, Harold Rains and Larry Stafford, that they disagreed that that this rose to the level of a material finding, and that's fine, but it's the job of the SAO to decide what is a material finding or not, and they use standards in it. And they decided that it did come up to a material standard. The guy that does inspections is a busy guy. He does have a schedule. And honestly, his schedule being incomplete was not a reflection. It was not his fault. It was management. Not having internal controls, I think, sufficient internal controls to list the properties. There are three changes that happened in the past 5 years. One is the database that we use to track the properties and the scheduling was no longer supported.
I'm buying stuff now up in Metal Guns trying to get us into this century.
Was no longer supported, and we had to manually transfer the whole list to an Excel spreadsheet year before last. And two properties of all the properties did not make it to that list. And that was, staff error, and the internal control was not doing, when we verified the list, we missed that. Those units had been inspected up to that point, but when we transferred them, when the database changed,
they're not on the list, and he's not going to go look at it.
And then he's not going to look at it. Not his fault. The second, there was one property that I have, and both of those properties were not like an annual, they were like a 3-year inspection cycle. So the last time they had been inspected was 2013. So right before we did, we did the change. There's one property, there were three properties that had not been inspected in the previous year. One property, none of us had an explanation for, never made it even to the database back in 2008. So we had a 2008 property and two 2013 properties. So that was one aspect of that finding. The second aspect came with the home final rule change that took place in 2013 and went into effect last year, which changed the requirement when you did the inspections, changed the requirements for sample size. So if you had a multi-unit property prior to 2015, following guidelines, you would go and you would inspect one unit out of every, you had a certain
just sample,
a certain sample
it's
size.
It's 25% of the home
correct
units.
Yeah.
And if it was four units, like between one and four units, you inspected one of them. That being 25%. After 2015, that sample size changed to, if it was below four units, you were supposed to inspect all of them. So at that time, in early 2015, he received part of that guidance, but he didn't receive the sample size part. So he went to those properties.
He was following the old way.
As required by the HUD guidelines, he did not inspect the sample size, which had changed. Only for those properties, it was four units or below. So that was the second aspect of the home quality inspection. And the third piece, and it's a combination of the three that led to material finding. None of these in itself was considered very significant by anyone. The third piece is HUD also changed with a change from 2015, but that the fact that it was a change didn't really play into this. But HUD requires a final inspection when you finish a project, which makes sense. And then it requires requires inspections in a routine periodicity for housing quality standards moving forward. The first one being within 12 months from completion of the project. So you do a final inspection, and then within 12 months. That piece was ambiguous in the regulation. Ambiguous to the point that the SAO, the auditors were unsure if you had to do a final and an additional inspection within 12 months, and which we had not been doing. We did a final inspection to a higher standard than the home quality standard inspection, you know, made sure it was code compliant, et cetera. And then we do another inspection after 12 months and started the inspection cycle moving forward. And it turns out, you know, and we thought we were following the regulation, you know, and we actually pushed back on the SAO when they brought it up, and they weren't sure. We showed them why, in terms of the description. And we went back to our HUD program officers, and they were unsure. They had to go, check higher guidelines. And what came down was you're supposed to do a final inspection, and you're supposed to do another inspection within the first 12 months, not after the next 12 months. And we do them now. You know, we're like, okay, we do them now. So before the SAO was done, and all this came out, by the way, the last day, everything was fine in terms of the audit. You know, we check in with them, you know, support them as they needed every morning, and it wasn't until the last day they're like, well, we have questions about these. But before they were done with the report, we've done, policy corrections to the internal controls. So we're doing annual verification, comparing the whole project list with the schedule that the inspector needs to do. The inspector receives full changes, like directly from HUD, to any program guidelines that that deal with inspections. And we're doing now final and within 12, added to his workload, but we're doing final inspection and within the first 12 months. And every unit that we've ever funded with HOME is in compliance with current guidelines right now, and even before the auditors were done. And they recognize that. They're not allowed to confirm that it's corrected until they come back next year. That's just the reality. So I'm not going to make any excuses for why those three properties did not make it to the new schedule. And I think it's also a reflection of internal controls that the inspector did not realize the sample size had changed. But that's how it happened.
And can I ask you one? I read the paper, left, right, right, left. The two gadfly women are good friends in North County who complained that we were spending money in.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the love of those women. See them all the time. We went to different high schools together. What became of that?
Oh, and there was another article that didn't come out for you. Because it wasn't part of the finding, and I probably should have as well. But we did get a separate visit from the SAO, and they looked into it. They received a formal complaint. What made Mayor Johnson is referring to is Clark County Citizens United filed a formal complaint to the SAO and the Attorney General, asking them to look into HOME, into how we were spending HOME funds, because in their mind, those funds are meant to be used for rural,
small
city
areas.
Yes.
Their
I heard it
from them.
and we have the proposed to us joint projects at times when appropriate with the city of Vancouver. And as we discussed last year, even when we talked about changing policy, funding, making sure that we do proportional funding, and even making changes after you've done award decisions to raise or lower what is allocated to make sure it's within proportion of the population being benefited by whatever facility we're doing. But they made a complaint to the Attorney General and the SAO. The SAO came to us, looked into the complaints, and there was an article in the paper that there was no validity to the bills. So I wanted to make sure that assuming that most of you had already seen it in the paper anyway, but I wanted to make sure that if you hadn't, regardless, that we discussed the funding that happened and that you received the article. I don't really have an issue with any of the facts in the finding. I think some of the, not, I don't know about, like, our staff in this room, but there are county staff that would have disagreement with the fact that it was a material finding. But the reality is, material finding or not, the reality is we did have those internal control deficiencies. As soon as we found out about those deficiencies, we corrected them. If we had known about those deficiencies before the SAO was here, we would have corrected them regardless. And I think we would have figured it out on our own without the SAO in another 6 months.
That's why we have.
Yes.
That's why they do
the work. No, I understand that. I was just, as I read the paper, I was like, oh, make a note.
Oh, yes.
Because my name and Ms. Olson's and the other elected folks are on that, and so you get calls. So I say, hey, don't you guys sit on that?
Yes.
And then we try to make an explanation of what we did.
But do you have any questions about the finding or what we're going to be doing, what's changed, and what we're doing moving forward?
How many total projects do we
have? Oh, gosh.
We have a $21 million portfolio.
Yeah, so.
It's CDBG at home, in fact.
It's,
but I don't know.
We've counted the properties.
Not all of these properties. So the list that's in here is not the entire list of properties that are home. This is just home funded in here, and it's not even the entire list of properties that are home funded because these are only the ones that have been inspected this year.
We should know how many pieces
that we have. Oh, we do. We do.
Just off the top of your head.
Yes.
Yeah, we wouldn't expect you to know off the top of your head.
And I'll get that to you.
Yes, we do. It's the normal answer would be a lot.
Yes.
Okay, next.
And one of the things, one of the ways that we're moving forward with this, our online, our loan management program that we use is that owners of that software are doing a massive update to make it cloud-based and things like that. And one of the things we've come back to asking for, because all the jurisdictions that have home money are needing this piece, is to actually make a link between the loan and the fact that it needs an HQS inspection, so it will actually be in that system and it will help us know. It's an easy click to say yes, it needs it, versus trying to remember to put it on another spreadsheet somewhere else. And so that is one of the things that will be coming down the pipeline. We just don't know exactly what.
Yeah. And home units.
I would think 100 might be in the ballpark.
Yeah, I was thinking between one, like, I bet it's upwards of 100, but it's around that. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say thank you for the thorough explanation of the finding. I think I'm very satisfied with the discussion and the actions that have been taken and that have been taken. So thank you.
He had a pretty busy workload for that month of June and July, whatever it was.
Yeah, he usually goes from June. Well, actually, he's been starting a little earlier this year, so.
And so we've gone through our list. Is there?
Now, does he work for?
He works for me.
For you, okay. Not the building department.
No.
We kind of skipped over the application update.
Oh, shoot! Yes, you're right. Thank you. You want to? I've been talking for a while. Do you want to?
Yes, I don't mind. So we are doing the next year's So it'll be 2018 funding for Home and CDBG. The applications will go live to the applicants on October 1st. We'll do the pre-application for the month of October, and then full applications will be due either December 1st for CDBG funds or December 15th for the home funds. We have made some exciting changes to the application, working with our fiscal people, where we're not going to have to do the full administrative review in the application phase, which is very exciting for you guys. What it entailed for all of our applicants is they had to submit their audits and they had to answer a bunch of questions. There's a few really easy questions still in there. There was a whole lot of extra documentation that they had to upload so that we could do an administrative review. And so if it's a new agency, we will still do an administrative review before they submit their final application. But for our agencies that have been around for a long time, we'll do that administrative review before we actually do a contract. So not as many of the agencies will have to go through that whole process. And then we're starting to look at all the questions and make sure that they're really what we need to be asking for each of the projects, for the funding types. And so we will have that release October 1, and notice will go out. And then we'll do our pre-submittal workshop on October 8th, or October 9th, right after this meeting. And so because there's a few of those changes, we do recommend that your agencies, if you plan on applying, have somebody stay, so we make sure we go over all of that, any of those changes that
might happen. What's their deadline for to get it into all finished and ready to go?
So the pre-application is mandatory, and that's due October 31st. And then for you, the CDBG would be December 1st for the full application.
Thank you. So on October 9th, about how long will that last after the meeting?
We
scheduled to noon.
We give it an hour,
okay.
But we know it normally doesn't take an hour. So
I think the room we have from 10 to noon, right? But historically, it's been half an hour to 45 minutes.
Okay.
And we'll do CBG first. So
how many are you expecting?
As far as to attend?
At 10, after 10 o'clock.
It's not mandatory, so we don't require people to be there, but we highly recommend it. And so usually there's 10 people or so.
Well, I'm curious, are we going to have an Irvine County Policy Board meeting at 8:30 that day? And then they would have to stay on until 10 and then do the workshop until 11? Because
we can change the time.
We might push the meeting closer to the workshop.
Yeah.
Go a little later and then.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to have a heavy agenda.
That's what I was worried about.
Yeah.
Maybe start.
Well, we have time to walk out.
We would have actually, we had a debate whether to, you know, to have this meeting or just wait till the next one, but we wanted to at least talk about paper and have some opportunity for questions as we're working on it throughout this month. And the finding, you know, I wanted to make sure that sooner rather than later, you know, there's an opportunity for the UCPB to have a full discussion of findings since it was there. So those were the two, you know, compelling reasons that we had the meeting this month.
So the other one is a 10 to 11?
Yes. So
yeah.
For the pre-submittal.
So do we just want to push, so we're going to have a light agenda for next month? So do we just want to do this one at 9:30?
Sure.
Or another possibility, 8:30 works really nice because those of us that are in the outskirts don't go into the office for a short period of time. We just start our morning here. And so if you start at 8:30, the other option would be to move that workshop up a little bit earlier.
We could do that, I think.
So move that to 9.
Yeah.
And then move that to 10.
Yeah.
I prefer later meetings than earlier meetings, but I will learn.
Yeah.
And I'm from the background because we won't start at 6 in the morning just to get it over with and done.
And I'm flexible too. I knew if it started at 9 or 9:30, then I'd probably go into the office for a period of time.